Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church and America's most popular, self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. 2 weeks from today, we'll have Ann Coulter on the program talking about her new book, Godless. That'll be fascinating. Now, today, I asked Brian Rohrbaugh, Columbine dad Brian Rohrbaugh, to come into studio because we have some things we need to update. Welcome, Brian. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Bob.
You're very welcome.
Now, on yesterday's show, the Denver audience didn't hear a story that you covered for the Iowa audience, and I think we ought to go back and talk about that. It's a tragic case of a grandmother who locked her grandson in a dog kennel while she was at work.
And she did this daily for 3 years. This is a shocking story. And you're right, I did it in the second half hour, which is always available on our website at kgov.com. And our Iowa audience heard it over KFFF, but in Colorado, KLTT audience didn't hear it. So yeah, let's talk through that. I got the story from 9 News, and at our website, we linked to the story. This woman, her name is June Candelario, and she is accused of locking her 13-year-old grandson in a dog kennel while she went to work for the last 3 years. Rather startling and sad and sick story. She's 61 years old, and she kept her grandson in a plastic dog kennel that was 46 inches by 30 inches by 35 inches. And she would go to work Monday through Thursday from 4 in the afternoon to 2 a.m. She'd get home around 3 a.m. and let him out. And this is right. Just a devastating story, of course.
Well, it is. And it's tragic in every way. And, you know, you'd think when you hear a story like this that, you know, there's probably other signs of problems and, you know, whether it's a lack of mental function or something else, you would expect it to show up in other areas.
Right.
And clearly this is child abuse.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's probably a lot of circumstances involved in it, but this was wrong.
Yeah. And she's being charged not only with child abuse, but as we said, the moment we saw this story, just the headline, we thought that she should be charged with kidnapping and false imprisonment.
Right.
And those are serious felonies in God's eyes and in the Word of God, the Bible. But it turns out they are charging her with second-degree kidnapping, reckless endangerment, false imprisonment, and child abuse.
Well, that's right. Now, you mentioned that she was going to work. Mm. Where did she work?
This is the shocker. Of course, we've done all these shows about how dysfunctional the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department is. They're the ones who caused the Columbine tragedy to happen. It should have been prevented, Columbine. Anyway, this woman works at the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department.
And what does she do?
She's a counselor. So she helps people figure out how it is that their life is out of whack and how to live a healthy life. That's what she does.
Yeah, a detention counselor.
Yeah, June Candelario. So she's utterly broken.
Right.
Utterly broken. But in the whole system, it's no longer a justice system. Now it's just a system. And they claim that they're not trying to uphold justice. Right and wrong has nothing to do with it. Morality, God's law, it's just a system. And so they don't know right from wrong.
Well, that is exactly right. They don't know right from wrong. And then we've seen the corruption in Jefferson County. It goes on to this day. People look at small improvements and they want to see more than has really taken place. But it's not a very good place. And my thought about this is a well-run police department, even in our broken system, would have probably realized there was something wrong. You know, I wonder how many employees like this are in Jeffco, because Jeffco's a place you'd go if you're not quite right, because you know they're not going to throw stones because they have so many ghosts in the closet and so much corruption that they kind of live and let live.
Yeah, and the idea is when you're in law enforcement, you need to be above reproach because the people need to have a respect for the law and for the governing authorities, for the police who uphold the law, for the judges who enforce it. And when the system is broken and then people in the criminal justice system themselves commit crime, they lie, they tamper with evidence, then people, not just one or two here and there, but as a general opinion, people disrespect our criminal justice system.
Well, that's right. They disrespect it. The criminals all know how to use it and get away with more because the system is broken, but it's predictable if you're a criminal. And so you have all of these problems. And, of course, the officer on the street kind of pays the ultimate price because he's, you know, the link between the public and the department.
Right.
And, you know, you see a lot of frustration among the good officers and you see, unfortunately, a lot of corruption among the bad.
And we just on the show, just was it in the last couple programs, I've mentioned that we should give the benefit of the doubt to the police when they go into a hostile situation. And just recently in Indiana, there was an armed robbery at a pharmacy, and the pharmacist was able to dial 911, and the police show up, and the guy pulls a gun, and they shoot him, and they killed him, and that was proper. They did their job. But I like to point out that we need to give the benefit of the doubt to the police, but it's tragic when the criminal justice system is so broken because people so disrespect the system that it's hard to do that. And often the police don't get a fair shake. And part of the reason is because the laws they're upholding and the courts that are running the system are broken or even immoral.
Well, we have to be wise enough to look at the evidence because there are cases, and I certainly represent one of them with Columbine, where there was wholesale conspiracy.
Right.
And their intent was to deceive the families of the victims and the public about what they knew. They held secret meetings. But we didn't know that for years and years. And all we could do is look at the facts and realize something was wrong. And that's what you have to do in all of these cases, unfortunately, because there have been too many times where the police have done something they shouldn't have, and it's made national news. And, of course, the idea that there's always something wrong is kind of planted in the people's minds just from following the news. But I agree with you. In general, you give the benefit of doubt of the doubt to the police unless there's some additional information that brings that into question.
Right.
And then we not only have the right, but we have the obligation to question that once it surfaces.
Well, just like in Columbine, when the sheriff of Jefferson County started to say, well, here's what happened, you had no reason to doubt his word. You assumed he's telling the truth.
Absolutely right. I had no reason to question anything that the authorities were saying until later.
Until you found out they were lying. You used the word conspiracy, and just recently a TV reporter in Denver said to you, you're calling this a conspiracy? And you said, no, the state attorney general called it a conspiracy.
That's correct. Right. From a grand jury investigation launched by the state's attorney general, at the time it was Ken Salazar, who's now a Colorado senator. He did an investigation which, in spite of the fact that they didn't want to uncover all of this stuff, it just surfaced. And there truly was a conspiracy of at least 20 high-ranking government officials in Jefferson County who met in the hours after Columbine, and they decided that they were going to destroy some evidence and withhold most of the evidence. And that meeting didn't come to light for 5 years. And after it came to light, it was an obvious conspiracy. Now, too much of the time when you hear the word conspiracy, it's someone who wants to believe that there's aliens landing in San Francisco, but it really has no basis in fact.
Right.
In this particular case, it's well documented, and it's not some fringe news source.
No.
It's the Attorney General of Colorado.
Yeah, and it's been reported by all the major media in Colorado and around the country, in fact. Okay, so the programs we did with you, I'm speaking with Columbine dad Brian Rohrbaugh and Randy Brown, who did more than anyone else to try to prevent Columbine in advance by repeatedly going to the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department with complaints about Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold and the website and the death threats and the pipe bombs. And all that was denied in the aftermath of Columbine, but then all the Sheriff's Department paperwork came out and they could no longer deny it because they had done a search warrant application and they had a whole Harris file. And so that all came out. But then what we also talked about with you and Randy Brown was that the Sheriff's Department, Jefferson County, to this day is trying to help the Harris and Klebold families to keep information out of the public, information that goes directly to how did this happen?
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. Is they have partnered with the Klebolds and Harrises. In fact, the partnership started about 8.5 years ago. Columbine happened 7 years ago. But this partnership has got quite a long history. And when these two murderers had finished their deeds on April 20th, the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department and the DA's office and the county attorneys decided that they had to make a deal or wanted to make a deal with the Klebolds and Harrises to protect their vanity. And that is going on to this day. And some people are going to say, well, you know, it's been long enough. You guys don't need to talk about it anymore. And I've got a letter here. I'd like to read part of it to you just because this is why we're talking about it.
This is a 4-year-old letter?
No, this letter is dated June 8th of 2006.
Oh, it's last week.
It's written from Sheriff Ted Mink, and it's written to me.
And he's the sheriff,
the current sheriff
of Jefferson County in the Sheriff's Department. And the former sheriff, John Stone, was last seen baking donuts at a Costco.
Right, which was certainly an upgrade in his professional career.
And at least he's doing something honorable now.
Right.
Right.
And this letter starts off, "Thank you for your willingness to share your concerns and suggestions on whether or not to allow inspection of certain Columbine records by the public." Now, what is he talking about? He's talking about the basement videotapes that Klebold and Harris made. And these tapes started about a year before the attack and went right up to the morning of the attack. And it's basically these two guys giving justification for the murders they were going to commit. And in a nutshell, their justification is evolution, survival of the fittest. We have the right to kill those we perceive weaker than us. And then the school's teaching of there are no absolutes. And if there are no absolutes, then it's not wrong to murder.
And so, and these are things that are extremely relevant to the public discussion. You know, the media laments and they say, we want to know the warning signs. We want to know how can this happen. And so here are two of the mass murders of the school shootings in, recently in America. And they're saying, well, here's how it happened. We're taught that we've evolved from animals. There's no such thing as right and wrong. There are no absolutes. The stronger can destroy the weaker. So we're going to do it. We're going to act out basically the fundamental principles behind our godless education.
Right. And they talked about which movie director would make a movie about them and all these other things that they wanted to accomplish because they thought they were so valuable in the world. So there are those basement videos. But there's also writings that were seized from the Harris and Klebold homes. And some have been released, but obviously what we're talking about here has never been seen by the public. Now, I've seen most of this stuff, and it's incredibly disturbing. And the average person in the public is going to say, how could a school have accepted these documents and graded them in the cases of homework and work they did for the school? And then the rest of the people—
So when the school puts out this public persona like we, of course, are responsible. And if we had any indication that Harrison Klebold, that these students were dangerous, we would have done something about it. Here's the evidence that they had every indication.
Well, they did. And, you know, they did dock the grade a little bit from Klebold, they went from an A-plus to an A-minus because of the language he used, not because of the content talking about the joys of murdering innocent people. Mm. But I guess the language the teacher thought deserved just a little bit of doc on that excellent grade her prize student.
So not only was that accepted at Columbine High School as schoolwork, not only was it accepted, but it was graded as excellent.
Exactly right.
As excellent.
Yeah, that is a standard by which you can judge Columbine High School and, for that matter, every government school in this country.
But, and so we could see why the system doesn't want this material public. We could see why.
Absolutely right. They don't want to answer the questions. They don't want to admit just how depraved the system is and how damaging it is to kids.
Yeah. To drive that point home, especially to parents and Christian parents, all parents really, but the system is depraved. The system does not know right and wrong. And when you don't know right from wrong, that means you advocate what is immoral, what is wrong. And your kids are being set up to fail and to destroy themselves. If they're going to a government school, you need to do whatever you can. If you think there's no way you can get your kids out of public school, you could stop. You could turn off this program right now and pray and ask God, God, how can I do it? Help me figure out a way to get my kids out of the school. If I can't afford it, if I don't know how to homeschool, if there's no Christian school near me, Lord, how do I get my kids out of a godless education system and raise them in a responsible way?
And that's the thing that we should all be working for, all of us who are parents. It's not worth your time to try to fix this system. You know, Bob, you and I were talking the other day, and I mentioned to you that in looking at the work that Focus on the Family does, which I think is a great ministry, although I think they have stumbled in who they take their marching orders from. I think their involvement in politics has greatly deterred their vision.
Yeah, it's not wrong to be in politics, but they've become committed legal positivists where they approve of judges who will, even if the judge violates do not murder, as long as he upholds the process.
Right.
So we're praying that Dr. James Dobson and Focus on the Family, they recognize that legal positivism is humanism, and that it dishonors God, and that they will say, we will no longer obey man rather than God.
Right, and that we certainly hope they do that, and the sooner the better. But anyhow, their ministry is geared towards helping the family.
Right.
And as I've thought about it recently and looked back at some of the shows, one thing became obvious to me, that 99% of the subjects they talk about
The fights they're battling,
the things where they're trying to help families with the problems, 99% of those are caused by the government schools.
Mm.
And you take any topic, for example, parents trying to relate to their teenagers.
Right.
That's caused by a government school.
Yeah, right, because the schools undermine the relationship between the parent and the child. The curriculum does that. It attempts to put a wedge between the parents' value system and their belief in God and the children. And that wedge typically is placed there effectively. It works.
Well, it does. And if we put that in the back of our mind when we think of a government school, of any public school. Now, parents often, and I run into this all over the country, parents will tell me, you know, it's too bad it happened at Columbine, but it could never happen here. Or my school is good. And what they don't realize is we all want to believe that because none of us want to put our kids intentionally in harm's way, and it's easy to believe that.
Right.
But what the school teaches here in Colorado, it teaches in Florida, it teaches in Kansas. You know, people think that it's somehow a local issue. It's not.
No, it's systemic. And you just ask yourself, is it a godless education system? And we were in Greece, Brian. We just got back from the fabulous trip there for 2 weeks, a Bible tour of Greece. And in the Athens airport, flying out, Al Sharon, who's our board operator today, he struck up a conversation with a Boston public school teacher. And she's trying to defend the public schools. And I said, well, the reason all these kids are getting pregnant and all this destructiveness is because it's a godless education system. And she came back and she said, it's not a godless. And then she stopped herself and we talked through it. And of course, it's godless.
You know what that reminds me of? When you and I were on a plane going to Florida.
Right.
And we happened to be sitting next to an assistant district attorney for Arapahoe County. And
right.
The audience may remember a police officer by the name of Jim Taylor told me one day after Dan was murdered at Columbine that he witnessed the crime.
Right.
And she worked for the same organization that he did. And you remember how horrified she was when you mentioned it to her.
Yeah, she was somewhat stunned.
Yeah.
And then here we are sitting next to her, flying. We're flying to Florida to do a presentation to the executive director of Reclaiming America, D. James Kennedy's ministry.
Right.
And that was during Hurricane Rita.
Right. Timing was great.
It was. Okay, so the public schools are godless, and Harris and Klebold were acting out some of the fundamental principles they learned. There is no such thing as right or wrong. We are just animals, survival of the fittest. The stronger organism can kill the weaker.
Right. And they, of course, adored all forms of racism. And they justified that with some logic tied directly back to evolution.
Yeah. Charles Darwin's subtitle of his book, Origin of the Species, has to do with survival of the favored races. And he was a racist, and you could learn all about that online if you're interested.
So back to this letter, and again, this letter is from the current sheriff of Jefferson County, Ted Mink, written June 8th of 2006, and he continues, I am grateful to those who took the time to express their opinions on this difficult and divisive topic. Hmm. As someone who has been affected deeply by the events at Columbine, your input factored heavily into my decision. Now, he said it's a divisive topic.
Yeah, divisive to who? We want the Harrison Klebold basement videos and their writings to be released.
Well, why do we want it released? Because they lied about what was in it, and they have never done anything to try to protect other children and other schools. They've stood back for years saying, we didn't do anything wrong. You know, and they have done everything in their power to make sure the truth isn't known. But what could be learned from this could save lives, first of all. Secondly, once a police organization decides they're going to destroy evidence and lie about things, the public has a right to see absolutely everything. Mm. And in this case, where they partnered and paid the legal bills to go to court to try to keep this locked up, which they've been successful at for all these years.
They partnered with the murderers' families against the victims.
Against the victims.
That's correct. With the Harris family and the Klebold family against the families of the victims.
That's right. And so,
and this is the sheriff's department, of all things.
Right.
I mean, how would you make this up if you were writing a Hollywood script? How would you make it up? It's bizarre.
It is. And so they call it divisive. The only thing divisive about this from a decency perspective is it's divisive because they've lied and they don't want the truth out. So in their mind, it's divisive.
Yeah, the cover-up side.
Right.
Considers this controversial.
Right. But in terms of the victims' families, the people who lost the most, who have suffered the most, who have been abused the most, it is almost completely unanimous to release this. There's a couple families who don't have an opinion. But when they call it divisive, it's not divisive among the families. It's not divisive among the public. One of the reporters, a man by the name of Rick Salinger from CBS Channel 4 here, he did a survey, not scientific, of course, among many of the families. And then he told me, we looked everywhere we could to find someone against this, so we went to a child psychologist.
Oh.
And he said, even that person said, of course they should be released. This will help the victims understand what was going on and come to terms with what happened.
Well, that's true. And also, when they say that we want to learn from this to prevent future incidents. Well, one example is when Harris and Klebold do these destructive school work projects and they turn in their homework assignments, and it's about killing innocent people and enjoying it. That should be part of the public dialogue, that parents should realize that this kind of thing is accepted in public schools and there should be outrage over it. And the public schools, since they're based on godlessness, they don't actually know that it's wrong to affirm students in their fantasies about killing innocent people. They don't know that's wrong.
Well, and on top of that, they had even more evidence because they had videos of Klebold and Harris shooting up trees and comparing it to people's heads. Mm. They knew about the pipe bombs. They knew about the other crimes. I mean, there's a lot more evidence than
right.
just the letters or the
right.
homework. But it should all be released, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been fighting, as you know, since late 1999 for the accountability that needs to come with telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still working on that.
Brian, we're almost out of time in Colorado. Can we finish the letter?
Sure. Over the last few months, I have weighed the various perspectives in an effort to make an informed and considered choice. Barring any unforeseen delays, my office will announce its intent and file with the Jefferson County District Court in the coming days. Thank you, Ted Mink. Now, again—
So we don't know what he's going to do, whether he's going to release this stuff or not.
Well, you know, my guess is they don't want it released. They probably won't. And we need to talk about, and we'll continue, of course, for the Iowa show, but we need to talk about what's going on this Friday with President Clinton coming to town for a groundbreaking ceremony on the Columbine Memorial.
Right.
I appreciate Clinton coming here to help with the memorial, and he has helped with fundraising and that type of thing. But clearly, his behavior, he has never been held accountable for.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear to me, based on the evidence, that he's a rapist.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of immoral things he's done, as we all have. But in his particular case, he set a standard for the country that hurt the country. But I guess what I'm saying is even an evil person can still do some good. So I appreciate him coming from that point of view, and I'm guessing you appreciate him coming once again. So
to have an opportunity
right.
to get out there. We have done this now in about 150 cities, all the way from Little Rock, Arkansas, at the opening of his Clinton Library, to Auckland, New Zealand, when he went there with the G8, to Martha's Vineyard, and just all over the country, 150 cities. And so once again, we will be there reminding people of the devastating evidence that he raped this campaign supporter, Juanita Broderick, and he has never been held to account. And this will go down as a footnote of his legacy, the despicable and even criminal way that he has treated the women around him for decades.
Right.
So, all right. After this break, we'll be back with Columbine Dad, Brian Rohrbach.
The murderers on death row today should be executed. Excuse me, what did he just say? My name's Doug McBurney, and I heard Bob Enyart say just that in 1995, and I've been listening ever since. I found out that the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel, and that Christianity and justice need not be mutually exclusive. A video titled God and the Death Penalty is available today at kgov.com. God and the Death Penalty examines God's ideas about justice. You'll learn the New Testament verses affirming the death penalty and understand why God never repealed capital punishment. Find out God's opinion. Order God and the Death Penalty today at kgov.com. That's God and the Death Penalty at kgov.com.
Bob Enyart Live, our website, kgov.com. You can't get much easier than that. Just four letters, like a radio station, kgov.com. And 2 weeks from today, we should have Ann Coulter on the show to talk about her new book, Godless, and all the controversy she's gotten herself into. And tonight, she'll be on Jay Leno's show talking about her book and defending herself. And actually, we have Brian Rohrbach in studio. Brian, when the news about her book came out back around June 6th, I pointed out on the show that her comment about the widows the 9/11 widows, the four from New Jersey, were enjoying their husband's death, and that that was really out of line.
Right. That was inappropriate. Well, the point she's making on most everything are extremely accurate.
Right.
In the case where someone's husband or family member has been murdered in a terrorist act or any other kind of act, it's very difficult, unless those people were active some way politically, to, you know, accuse them. That is, it's wrong to accuse them of using, enjoying the death of a spouse.
Right. And you could go after their political position. And, of course, they're using the opportunity of this crime as a public opportunity to speak their opinions. And their opinions, they're coming from a left-wing philosophical position.
Right, which they probably had beforehand.
Right.
And, you know, we have to put it in perspective with me, for example. First of all, the news media comes to you and asks you, begs you, literally begs you to come and talk about what's transpired in your life. They did that with me with Columbine, and to this day, you'd be surprised how many calls I get that are related to Columbine from media outlets. So they come to you and they ask your opinion. And, you know, some people might try to take advantage of that for personal gain or or whatever. But you're being asked for your opinion. And secondly, you've generally lost more than the guy sitting in, you know, Montana.
Criticized.
Right. Looking at it. So your perspectives are important.
And the issue of exploiting a tragedy, if a crime happens and someone says, you know, this is because law enforcement failed, or if a fire breaks out and somebody says, you know, these exit doors should not have been locked, and they go on a crusade to not allow businesses to lock their exit doors, well, you're exploiting a tragedy if you're advocating something that's wrong or destructive. If you have this agenda and some tragedy happens and you are using it to advocate your destructive agenda. But if a tragedy happens and you have the solution, or you're on the side of the fix and not the side of the problem, and you say, look, there are drunk drivers because we don't punish drunk drivers well. We need to do a better job of that. So somebody gets killed by a drunk driver and you go and you have a public forum and you say, look at what happened. This shouldn't be happening. You're not exploiting that death. Unless you're using it to advocate something wrong, then you're exploiting it.
Right. And I think the point that Ann Coulter makes that is accurate here is that people come to you to find out your opinion. And then if your opinion matches their political agenda, they promote you. For example, after Columbine, the anti-gun lobby flocked around anyone who wanted to blame guns. Now, they didn't want to talk to me because I was making the comment that if even one of these bombs had gone off, not one of you people would be talking about the guns because the death toll from that would probably have been significant.
Right.
Not that 13 isn't significant, but when you're talking about 2,000 people,
the
numbers could have been dramatically different. But, of course, the people with the agenda – you know, she's right when she points out they use someone else's tragedy to promote their agenda.
Yeah. And so the media puts these four New Jersey widows on and presents them as though their opinion is unassailable because they lost husbands. And that's not true. And when you're caught up in a tragedy and you're given an opportunity to speak, you can speak, but then your words should be weighed like everyone else's.
Well, that's exactly right. And you know, as you know, it's never bothered me to take questions about what my stance is, why I believe what I do. You know, I've always said, just tell the truth and, you know, put it out here and we can all see it. And in fact, once again, that's kind of what we've been talking about with this letter from Sheriff Mink is tell the truth, release the documents and let's see what they say.
So now in Jefferson County, where the Harrison-Klebold families, they raised the murderers at Columbine, and they have a vested interest in their, you know, their false view of the world. They think they're better off if the truth is not fully known. And so now the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department is taking the side of the Harrison Klebold families trying to keep this material out of the hands of the public. And so this letter from the sheriff is saying he's made his decision, and within a few days we'll know what that decision is. What is it that should be released? You mentioned a couple things so far.
Well, the basement videos, and there was a shortened version, a 45-minute version of those tapes that Jefferson County edited, that at one time they showed the media after John Stone had allowed Time Magazine to have access to the full-length videos and wrote a big story about it. Then Jeffco tried to appease the other people in the media by showing them a 45-minute tape. Well, there's really about 3 hours of tapes. And, of course, they edited the 45-minute version to eliminate the things that made them look the worst.
Right.
And so they should release the tapes. That would be the 3 hours worth. Mm-hmm. They should release all the writings seized from the homes of Klebold and Harris.
So not only the school homework projects that were turned in.
Right. Their journals, their they wrote papers that have been released on how they were going to attack the school and about their weapons and stuff. But there's lots of writings that haven't been released. In fact, the media has called a document that Wayne Harris wrote, they've called it his journal.
Right.
Now, I know exactly what the journal is. I know what's in it. And I'm under a court order not to tell you everything that it means because I've seen all the support documents. But in a nutshell, my opinion of the document is that he kept a document about what was going on in his home and specifically with his son. And so for the people that say, well, those parents weren't aware, they didn't know what was happening, they should have been alert, but they just weren't. Well, obviously this journal would indicate that they had some reason to document it. Well, that should be released. People have a right to see that.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we had a caller to this program. It was, let's see, he was responding to the shows that we aired when we went to Greece with you and Randy Brown. And
right. I know which show you're talking about.
You know the caller. He called in. In fact, he posted on the internet at theologyonline.com, and then he called in. And it seemed like a nice guy, but I questioned some of his arguments, and I think we agreed at the end. But he was saying the Harrison Klebold family, you know, they love their kids as much as the next family. And I stopped him right there.
Right. Yeah, that is a truly false assumption.
Mm-hmm.
The evidence that you have publicly, you know, doesn't bear that out, what he's saying. Now, he'd like to believe that all parents love their children and that all parents value their children.
Except for the ones that murder their kids, rape their kids. I mean, that very day when he said that, after he hung up, I came back on the show and said, we were just looking in the paper about this girl who had been molested by her dad and was intimidated. She was fearful. She kept silent. Then when he started raping her younger sister, that's when she couldn't take it anymore, and she went to the authorities.
Right.
So all parents don't love their kids,
and
certainly not equally.
And there's further evidence. If they really love their children, these two families, if they really wanted to protect other parents from going through what they went through, they would have been out publicly saying, examine what we've done. Don't make the mistake in your family.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they got their lawyers and they remained quiet. And the Klebolds, in an interview with a guy from the New York Times, actually, he asked him about the murders. And then he wrote in the article that they don't like to dwell on the murders because that's not what their son's all about. You know, just ridiculous stuff. But to say that somehow the Klebolds and Harrises are victims here, you know, their position no one would want to be in. And if you compared it to mine, certainly it's worse to raise a child who becomes a murderer than it is to have one murdered. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you want to find good in these people because you basically believe that people are all good. But you ought to read what God said about people. Because basically people are bad and they have to try to be good. They have to try to be righteous. We're inherently evil, not inherently good.
Right, exactly. And the way we succeed in being righteous is by getting into a good relationship with God. And then he lives in us. And then it becomes our nature, our new nature in Christ, to do what's right. because you're motivated by love for God and the love for one another, your love for your neighbor.
Right.
So, all right, so this idea that everybody is good, obviously not true. The Bible doesn't speak of the confused or the mistaken. It speaks of the wicked and the evil.
Right.
And so you have the Harrison Klebold families and the way they responded, well, the way they raised the murderers and then how they responded afterwards, and obviously still not repentant, not even acknowledging their own guilt.
Well, that's exactly right. And they found a good partner in the Jeffco Sheriff's Department, DA's office, county attorney's office, and tax dollars have been spent to withhold these. And now Ted Mink's letter would like you to believe that somehow he's doing this very careful balancing act, you know, on behalf of the victims. This weighs heavy. There's a couple things I'd like to say. First, I bet you a hamburger that he has already told the Klebolds and Harrises what he's going to do, but he hasn't told the victims' families. We don't know. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I don't think he's going to release anything. If he does, it'll be a token release where he can try to gain favor. But the reality is all of these things should be released. And another thing is the police ballistics, which we have asked for in open records that have never been released. And why is that important? Well, they fired, depending on which count, over 80 bullets that have never been identified where they came from or what damage they caused. Yet Jeffco said no one was injured or killed as a result of a police-fired bullet.
Yeah, and so releasing the ballistics, I mean, so many ballistic reports have been released of the Harrison Klebold guns, and why not? Because there have been so many lies, so many direct lies, then the truth, the raw data, should be public so that people could go through and find out, have they lied more or are they telling the truth on this issue?
Yeah, wasn't it Reagan who said trust but verify?
Yeah, right, right.
Well, that's what's going on here.
Yeah.
Are they telling the truth? Well, they could be.
Yeah.
But why is it they're so hesitant to prove they're telling the truth if they are?
Mm.
And so I think you have to look at the overall picture. I mean, my son was murdered 7 years ago, and we're still talking about the same things we were at the end of that year. Mm. And yet all this money and effort has been spent to withhold this from the public.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is going to go on until it's released. And so it'd be great if this sheriff would actually release it. But I think this letter is certainly, you know, not as genuine as he'd like it to appear.
Yeah. There are elections coming up, I think, in Jeffco, too. So.
Yeah, of course there are. And I don't know if this has anything to do with that. But consider the timing. Mm. President Clinton's coming out for the groundbreaking on the Columbine Memorial. He has helped raise a great deal of money for the memorial. And now all of a sudden, Ted Mink, after all these months, after the Supreme Court said you can release everything, but we'll leave the discretion up to you, which they should not have done,
right,
as to whether it will cause harm to the public. And then you can do a weight and balance test and talk to people. And, of course, he's been looking for one person who would say you shouldn't release it. And, of course, he finds that in his own office.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea behind this is all flawed anyway. It should have just been released. But he's taken all this time. But now, all of a sudden, when Clinton's going to be here, he's sending us a letter saying he's going to go back to court,
mm-hmm,
and let them know what his decision is. So my guess is they'll go to court on Friday while Clinton's here and no one's paying attention. And they'll probably file with the court that we think it'll cause imminent harm, so we're not going to release it.
Mm.
But who knows?
Yeah.
I'd like to be wrong on this. I'd like him to release everything. It'd be a good start.
Yeah, we'll find out soon enough. Okay, and so we started the program talking about this Jefferson County Sheriff's Department counselor who put her grandson, 13-year-old boy, in a dog kennel for 3 years while she went to Jeffco to counsel people on how to put their lives in order. And that really leads us to the tale of two counselors, because there was another counselor at Jeffco who was dealing with Eric Harris.
Well, there certainly was. You would think when you read about this counselor who locks her grandson in a kennel, and I believe she was a detention counselor is,
yeah,
what the article says. So I'm guessing she's counseling people who are in jail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on probation and diversion and whatever.
Yeah, and so she's working with people who are known criminals. And you would think to yourself, this is isolated. There can't possibly be another counselor that would behave like this, right?
This messed up.
Right. So then we get, after a couple years after Columbine, I think it was 3 years, we finally forced the release of some of the records of Klebold and Harris while they were in diversion. Mm-hmm. And the whole time, Jeffco had been saying there were no red flags, there were no warnings.
Yeah.
We get the papers that were filled out when Harris was put into detention after being arrested. And we find out from that that he said that he was suicidal and homicidal. He told them, I want to murder someone.
Mm-hmm.
And so what did they do? They rewarded him by letting him out of diversion early with a glowing report.
Mm.
And so you got to ask yourself, what is counseling in Jefferson County? Mm-hmm. You know, how many of these things do you need before people realize that a wholesale cleaning in Jefferson County is needed, it's warranted, and to this day, they still have the same problems they had in 99.
So Eric Harris was in the diversion program because of the van they broke into?
That's correct.
Right? And so then he's making pipe bombs and putting death threats on the internet. And
the police had those while he was in diversion.
The police have that, and they don't follow up on that. They let him out early from diversion. The school sees the work he's turning in, how that him and Klebold enjoy killing innocent people.
And the gun videos, the other violent videos
that they
made
to the school.
And the school knew about the pipe bombs that they were building.
Yeah, and they say if only there were warning signs.
Right.
And then after the crime is committed, they lie about all this and pretty much say there were no reports, we didn't know anything, and so it's tragic. Well,
I remember a press conference that Dave Thomas, a district attorney, had. And in that previous show, we played a bunch of recordings from him, which pretty well identifies what kind of person he is.
Mm-hmm.
But Randy Brown showed up at that press conference, and he had printed up this white piece of paper with two big red flags on it. And he was handing it out to all the media, and he handed one to Thomas, but Thomas wouldn't take it. And the two big red flags on the white sheet of paper, one of them said, I'm homicidal. The other said, I'm suicidal.
Red flags.
Because that was the press conference right after this stuff was released.
Wow.
And so once again, Dave Thomas, the liar, one of the many liars in Jeffco, who for years had said they didn't know anything.
Right.
All of a sudden, these papers are forced out. And he's going to hold a press conference to try to say, you know, I didn't know, I never saw him, or whatever lie he was telling that day.
Yeah.
And Randy Brown shows up, and everyone in the press reported it. And sadly, that's what's had to happen for the truth to come out.
Let's see. I was in Jefferson County Jail for 2 months, as you know, being convicted for spanking my stepson 5 swats on the backside. And I was in there when Columbine happened. And the sheriff, John Stone, he was interviewed in an article, and it was about me, although he didn't mention my name, but he didn't like the fact that I was in jail for free.
Right.
And that he thought I should be paying, you know, whatever, $100 a day to be in there, because we were doing the radio show from in jail.
Right.
Which was really pretty funny. But then David Thomas, whose office prosecuted me over and over and over, even though I'd win an appeal. And I sent him a letter while I'm an inmate, and I had a kid come in. He was 18 years old. He had been in the system for most of the previous 5 years, a criminal locked up most of that time. And he had gotten out when he's 18. He's back in because he and his friends stole a van, or they stole a car. There ended up a police chase. He was sitting in the passenger seat. They ran a light and had a collision with a family in a van, a minivan, and a young girl about 9 years old was killed. So this kid, this punk kid, is in jail, and he's a product. I wrote this letter to Dave Thomas, and I said, Dave, I have one of your kids in here in my cell with me. I want to tell you how he's doing. And this kid, his attitude was, they have no right to put me in here because I didn't do anything wrong. I wasn't driving the car. And I said to this kid, you know, that girl is dead, and it's because you are a criminal.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up. That sounds very much like what I perceived was going on in the Klebold and Harris homes. Mm. Did you know in the van break-in, there's an interesting report written by a police officer who was admitting them. And apparently the Klebolds had called the jail, or the police had called the Klebolds and asked if they could talk to their son and told him that will be placed on diversion, we'll let him out, we've got to get statements. They refused to let him talk until they showed up at 2 in the morning with their lawyer.
Mm.
Now think about what kind of power you have to get a lawyer up at 2 in the morning anyway.
Right.
But on top of that, they didn't trust the police because they knew that what the police were telling them, it had to be more serious. They knew enough about their kid that they didn't think the police were probably telling them the truth, and they didn't want their kid to answer. That's one of the reasons why I say that, you know, when you teach your kids, it's legal as long as you get away with it.
As long as you get away with it.
And you do that with paying lawyers to get you off and cutting deals and all of those things. When you teach them that, they believe they can do anything and that they're smarter than the rest of the public for getting away with it.
Yeah. So what I told this kid, he's my cellmate for a week or so. And what I told him was, I said, you know what? You're right. You shouldn't be in jail for this, because what God says in the Bible, you should be dead. You should be put to death because you are involved in the commission of a crime and an innocent little girl is dead. And you have the gall to say you're offended that they put you in jail. You should be dead, I told him. And that was within the first 5 minutes that we met each other. And we had a very good week together.
Well, that's good. That's probably the first time that this guy's ever heard any truth at all.
Yeah.
And it went contrary to everything.
Right.
That he learned in his public school.
Yeah, so I wrote the district attorney saying, I just want to give you an update, a report card on one of your kids, because you have been raising this kid for the last 5 years. And this kid kills a girl and has the gall and the lack of understanding of right and wrong to think he thinks he's in no way responsible. So,
well, I'm guessing Dave Thomas never contacted you about your letter, did he?
He never wrote me back.
Yeah.
Never wrote me back. You know, Brian, we're almost out of time. That kid did a weird thing. He ripped up all his sheets, pillowcases, clothing, everything in the cell. He flushed it all down the toilet. Every speck in that cell. The guard came in and wanted to know, where is everything? It was a bare cell. And the kid wouldn't talk, and I was just cracking up. I mean, jail is a joke. Jail's insane.
Right. It's crime school.
It's crime school. All right. We're out of time. Brian Rohrbaugh, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks.
It's really been a great show. I want to encourage you to check out our website, kgov.com. And especially if you've never heard any of our Bible studies, I think you'll really enjoy them. So you can call us at 800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. We'd be happy to send you a catalog. Or just go online to kgov.com, click on our store, and you'll love to see the materials there. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.